This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to a special issue 44, sub-issue 1 of the Bugle for the week when I'm on holiday in Italy eating the contents of a buffalo, and John has got a week off. So we're recording this, as those of you who unfortunately listened to last week's issue, I am in London, and John, are you still naked even a week later in St. Paul?
Well, I'm afraid, yeah. Minutes turn into weeks, and I'm in the same state as I was, Andy. I can only promise that I'll be back fully clothed for the next proper Bugle.
Right. That is reassuring for the entire planet.
Absolutely. And for me.
So, in this special sub-issue of the Bugle, we will be paying tribute to those of you who contributed to the Bugle Wikipedia entry. A few issues ago, we encouraged you to put lies about the Bugle on the Wikipedia entry. This lasted for about a day until Wikipedia shut it down.
It was a wonderful response, Andy. It made me proud to be a human being. Like the Republicans last week, I felt privileged to live in this world.
So, thanks to those of you who did contribute, and this is the complete Bugle Wikipedia entry before it was deleted. The Bugle, the alpha and omega of particularly notable weekly news podcasts hosted by John Oliver and Andy Zaltzman. Most of the time, Oliver is based in New York, with Zaltzman of Scooby-Doo and Jewish POW camp fame in London. Both hosts wear nothing but Mr. Kipling apple tarts as bespoke loincloths for the duration of each segment, before using them as bartering tokens to prevent the magpie uprising.
It's like a nonsense poem.
I prefer to think of it more as an extended cryptic crossword clue, to which the solution is the Bugle. Description. Based respectively in a penthouse turret in metropolitan New York and a small lair in South London, Dame John Oliver VI and Sir Andy Zaltzman, PhD, FRCS, FRS, KBE, ARBSM, BMuse, GCVO, DIC, KG. Also starring in Political Animal, Bremner Bird and Fortune, and Big Busty Naturals. It's not all made up. With their combined height of 3.59 metres, we'll together canoe through the murky swamp of big stories, small stories and assorted hogwash that inundates our daily world. The history of the Bugle. The Bugle was first created in 1907, but wasn't first heard until October 2007, due to the fact that podcasts weren't invented until much later.
True.
Early wax cylinder recordings of the show were recently found in Texas, Liverpool, Shanghai and Sydney. But these episodes are too controversial to be released today due to John and Andy's inexplicable decision to record each show in blackface. The original name of the satirical news show was Andy, John and Friends, but it was changed after it discovered that they had no friends. While their first podcast attracted little notice from around the world, the Bugle has been steadily growing in popularity amongst 17 to 86-year-olds due to its winning combination of childish humour, world news and its award-winning hotties from history section. Bit of biographical detail now. Born Andrea in 1969, Andy Zaltzman received a successful sex change operation in 1998. In fact, I won it in a competition. He had second thoughts 2 years later, becoming a woman again, before having yet another surgery in 2006 to settle on the androgynous happy medium we know and love today. Zaltzman was a founding member of the English pop band The House Martins. Zaltzman and the group parted ways in 1986, just prior to the band's pre-Christmas number one, Caravan of Love. Although Zaltzman refused to discuss the split, fans maintained that his contribution of mime was underappreciated by the band and fans, who often mistook his passionate solos for the gaps between album tracks. Well done, everyone. Andy shot 4 scenes for the latest Batman film, playing the Joker's partner in crime. However, these scenes were sadly left on the cutting room floor after the director deemed Andy's appearance too shocking for mainstream cinema. Oh, they just can't handle the truth. John Oliver, by contrast, won Olympic gold in the 1968 Mexico City Olympics, yeah, after being drafted into the Swedish women's volleyball team.
Correct.
They won by 3 points to nil against Andorra, John also wrote a cookbook, 2,362 Ways to Dice an Aubergine, which reached 92 in the Ukrainian hardback charts. It is now available at all second-hand bookshops and certain car boot sales on the A42. Lovely road reference for our British fans. Although widely known fact that John was born in Birmingham, is that a fact?
It is a fact, but it is not a fact that it's widely known.
And it's a fact that you've tried to suppress. It is not so widely known that he is actually made entirely of chocolate and was brought to life with the helpful magic of a singing and dancing cricket named Jiminy.
Right.
The truth is out. The show was almost ended in February 2006 when Andy and John had an argument over a cock meat sandwich.
What?
A cock meat sandwich, John.
Oh, yeah, well, that does sound like something we'd argue over.
They attempted to end the show in part different ways, but when they presented this to the Times, they discovered that the original contracts they signed when they started the show legally binds their friendship and made either of them leaving the show impossible. That's as good a way as any to keep a friendship going across long distance, you know.
Get it down on paper.
Yeah. But to this day, it's been said that you can hear the resentment in both Andy's and John's voices. After, if you play it backwards, we sound really stroppy. Controversy. In episode 39, it was revealed that John Oliver not only came from the same continent as the Spanish dictator Franco, but has shamelessly stood by as more than 1 billion people have died during his lifetime. The same episode also exposed the fact that Andy Zaltzman lives in London, the same city where the Communist Manifesto was written just a short 130 years before his birth. In addition, he's been accused of being a Crimean warfare fetishist. It was unclear for a time whether John and Andy would be allowed to continue the Bugle after these startling facts were revealed. In a separate controversy, neither Andy nor John has ever denied charges that they like to harm baby elephants. No evidence has been found to date to disprove this shocking accusation, and their silence on the matter has made even their most die-hard fans begin to question their innocence.
I'm not talking about it now either.
Yeah. Talk to my lawyer.
Yeah.
The guy with a big trunk and a selection of very small tusks that he uses as a xylophone. Oh, I've given it away. Now here's a section about our relationship, John, so brace yourself. John and Andy began dating in 1992.
Yeah, I remember. I remember, Andy. Yeah. You forget every year. Still carry on.
Well, I was drunk. I needed the money. They are yet to reveal their gay aims and have hidden their homographogneserianism by Andy getting a female human to accompany him around wherever he goes, including to Hugh Hefner's parties. What a night.
It was a depressing and short night, very much like Gawain.
At that party, for the only time in my marriage, well, I say marriage, we weren't actually married then, but I was slapped by my girlfriend, now wife, when I said to her at Hugh Hefner's 75th birthday party that she was the best-looking woman there, and she turned around and slapped me in the face.
Yeah.
Some women just don't know how to take a compliment. Anyway, the relationship section continues. John is a world-renowned paraphiliac with an aggressive penchant for pike or sharks. However, this is apparently a cover for the public eye, and he is secretly a soft and sensitive homosexual man who had a crush on Dale Winton before he started dating Zaltzman.
Yes.
John and Andy's relationship has had many ups and downs since they met at the Blue Oyster Bar on Broad Street, Birmingham, England, with many high-profile splits, but they now maintain a long-distance relationship, despite Dr. Love diagnosing their relationship to be terminally ill.
Let's not rake over those coals again.
Feature sections of The Bugle. Ask an American. Every few episodes, the guest known only as the American appears on the show. He associates with New York City, but has yet to realise that most of New Jersey is New York City's dingleberry. Much like how Canada is America's hat. The American hasn't made an appearance in several weeks, with no comment from either host as to a reason for his absence. There is much speculation to the identity of the American. Many believe him to be the former England international cricket captain, Ian Botham. Botham is currently serving as a tour guide in a giant shredded wheat breakfast cereal, which correlates with his absence from the Bugle, adding further credibility to the American Botham theory. There is no evidence that the American is in fact Jason Jones, John Oliver's colleague on The Daily Show, but he is. That's a lie.
I don't know who he is, Andy. No. Or she.
Now there's an Andy Zaltzman Memorial misinformation section. This section, which has no facts whatsoever, is dedicated to the memory of Andy, born Andrea Zaltzman, who died in March, aged 49 and 3/8. John Oliver's last name is actually the Apostle. After writing the Book of Revelations, the Lord decided to drop him off in the early 21st century to pursue his dreams as a British comedian.
That's right. It was a kind of thank you.
17 people, 14 hippos, and a small South American village were destroyed as a direct result of issue 36 of the Bugle. We're very sorry. This led to the Pope and many other fictional characters calling for the Bugle to be banned. In March of 2008, John Oliver was declared to be an enemy of the cross by John Hadji Ministries after Oliver trivialised the crucifixion of Jesus Christ as, quote, an S&M experiment that went horribly wrong. Did you do that?
Here's the really depressing thing. I don't think I did, but the way my life is at the moment, that actually could be true.
Zaltzman has recently claimed that he is driving up oil prices because he uses it as an ingredient stroke poison in his world-famous carbonara. He appears to be attempting to kill all his opposition, therefore becoming the all-powerful leader of the galaxy. You know, it's good to have an ambition. Otherwise,
and you do like carbonara.
I do love carbonara. He has been stated off the record as saying, "I will be queen, I want to be queen, not king, queen," leading to reports that he may well have another sex operation to become Queen Andrea the 16th. It has been rumoured that the American is none other than ex-dead Ugandan dictator Idi Amin, a claim which both John and Andy also refuse to deny. Effigies of both John and Andy are burnt in Kampala every Tuesday.
That's true, yeah.
That was just because of a rough gig we did there once.
We take it as a compliment. It's not meant that way.
Andy Zaltzman's bin was not actually stolen from his home. He lent it to Prime Minister Gordon Brown as a place to keep his plan to resurrect the struggling UK economy. Zing! A satirical lie. Well done, whoever put that one in. The bin was then stolen by David Cameron and sold to the LA Galaxy along with David Beckham. Well done, everyone who contributed to it.
Well done.
Truly heroic effort to bring lies into a world sullied by too many facts. It's much easier to know the truth if you know the truth doesn't exist. Aristotle said that.
Well, he might as well have done.
He said a lot of stuff. He only wrote some of it down. I'm not sure that's covered everyone's lies, but you're all heroes to us, and we will be building an audio statue to you all outside the Times headquarters. And also to Cherry Rawson, who set up a encyclopedia page for Bugle Lies. So if you feel impelled to continue lying about this podcast, please do so there. So thanks to everyone concerned. Now, we did promise to cover some of your unpublished emails in this issue, but John has to go and put some clothes on.
That's right.
After a week and a bit in the nud.
I want to go and shoot a moose.
That's what everyone does these days.
That's right.
Be careful, John. You'll be on a campaign ticket before the end of the week.
What began with a Woody Allen stand-up routine will end in a dead moose and me having a new item of clothing.
From me, Andy Zaltzman in London, bye-bye until the proper Bugle next week.
Bye!
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to an extra part of the extra edition of Bugle 44 sub-issue 1. As you may have heard, we had to cut short the studio recording for John to put some pants on, and I mean pants in the correct British sense, not in the stupid American sense, although those hopefully would have been put on as well. So I'm having to do the rest of the recording at my own house, so I'll just take you on a quick tour of Zaltzman Mansions. Well, we're now in the hallway. This door on the right takes us into the dining room. Can you hear that? That's what my dining room sounds like on a quiet Sunday afternoon. No one in, other than me, wife and baby, both out. If we progress on further, this now is the kitchen. Pretty good sounding room, I think you'll agree. Let's have a quick listen to the living room through this door here. And a lovely quiet room this on a Sunday. And here's something for you. What do you think this is the sound of? Well, that is the sound of me banging a fork against the leg of the 10-foot-high nude Florence Nightingale statue that I have as the centrepiece of our living room. This is what my stairs sound like. Now, at the top of the stairs, that, my friends, is as far as I'm letting you go. Keep your noses out of my life. I've got to maintain some privacy in this celebrity-obsessed world. But nevertheless, I'd like to think I've given you a little taste of what it's like to live Shay Zaltzman. Now it's time for some more of your emails. Some more of your emails now, and this one comes from Brian Whitney. No relation of Mike Whitney, the Australian Test cricketer, I assume. I could be wrong. Anyway, the subject is, who really are the Buglers? And Brian writes, at the beginning of every episode, you, Andy, say, hello, Buglers. But I think this is inaccurate. You see, you, John and Andy, brackets, in order of importance, brackets. You see, you are the Buglers. We're merely the Buglees, the ones who are bugled upon, as it were. Well, it's a good technicality, Brian, and thank you for raising that very important point. However, we like to think the term buglee would be discriminatory against those of you who merely participate by listening. And we like to use the more inclusive bugler, as in someone who bugles, the verb to bugle according to the Oxford English Dictionary, meaning to listen to or create the Bugle podcast. So, good point, but a wrong one. Thank you for your correspondence, Brian. This email comes from Sandy Lyle. Not Sandy Lyle the golfer, but Sandy Lyle who sounds like the golfer, but isn't the golfer. And Sandy writes an email on the subject of Pope Steele's follower. And he writes, Dear Andy and John, when I was watching Andy's show at the Edinburgh Fringe, thanks for coming, Sandy, thanks to all Bugle listeners who came to see my various shows at the Fringe. It's great to meet some of you. Anyway, Sandy writes, I noticed a lone voice kept on heckling in an increasingly anguished fashion. To my amazement, this was revealed to be Andy's daughter, who was then led away by some shadowy figure to a back room. Sandy continues, given the fact that the jokes weren't bad, thank you so much for that ringing endorsement. That is a 3-star review. Anyway, Sandy continues, I can only assume this was a wrecking tactic the child was undertaking at the bidding of some pressure group. My thoughts instantly went to the glorious Impala Nation, but on sober reflection, I remembered Andy's early bugle boast that he led an army of one against the Pope's millions of followers. It looks like either the Pope has wanted to make sure of victory and snared the child with promises of a holy water slide, or the crying Moppet has done the maths and left Andy to face angry Impala and Catholics alone. Well, you might have your finger very much on the conspiratorial pulse here, Sandy. It's not looking good for me either way. Sandy continues. Even more troubling was the removal of the tiny tot from the audience. Can't you take the sound of genuine protest, Saltzman? No, I can't. Is this the slow erosion of democratic principles at the Bugle? Yes, it is. Was this creeping authoritarianism why John fled to America? No, it's just he got a really good job offer. Sandy concludes, can't wait for the latest news from the front, Sandy. Sandy, I can give you the latest news from the front, and I have concluded extensive background checks on my daughter, Matilda, aged 20 months, and I can conclude that she is in the pay of the Catholic Church. But I will attempt to win her back with repeated showings of her favourite cartoon. That's parenting for you. And this heroic email comes from Matt in Prescott, Arizona, who writes on the subject of stolen pens, I stole 28 pens from work yesterday. I thought you might want to know. Well, Matt, thanks for keeping us updated of your heroic efforts to reallocate pens upon a more democratic and less capitalist means. So well done. Keep stealing those pens. Pens are public property. You can't steal air. You can't steal pens. They belong to us all. That's what God said, I think. It's been a while since I read the Bible. And this email comes in from the spectacularly named Bo Solon McCullough. I hope that's how it's pronounced. If it isn't, it should be. And Bo sent this email on the 19th of August 2008. And it's on the subject of birthdays. Dear the Bugle, recently Andy mentioned that a Bugle reference would be a great birthday present for his wife, and I hope she enjoyed it as much as I did. Well, Bo, she certainly did. She's been wearing that reference as earrings ever since, and she looks a picture. Bo continues, my girlfriend's birthday is next week, by which he means now about 4 weeks ago, and I think that a Bugle mention would be the greatest gift within my grasp, brackets of being completely broke. Can you not just make her something out of a cereal packet? What's happened to creativity? Bo continues, she is not a frequenter of the Bugle, boo, but I'm a diehard listener. Yay! If she doesn't know the greatest gift a free email can buy, then I'm sure that we were not meant to be, and I should just make a clean break. Damn right, Bo. So if you could tell Lisa to have a great birthday... Retrospectively, 3 to 4 weeks late, happy birthday, Lisa. I would be in your debt, says Bo, and could find out if her and I are truly compatible on a Bugle level. Well, let's see how that relationship pans out, if indeed you are still together after the total lack of birthday present at the time. Lisa, I hope you had a tremendous birthday, and if you're not listening to this, then you don't deserve to have had one. So, Bo from Milwaukee, thanks very much for that. And of course, listening to the Bugle with your partner is the surest way to find out whether you are compatible indeed. If you can't listen to the Bugle with a loved one, then what you need to do is call a divorce lawyer or emigrate. One of the two. And finally, a couple of hotties from history nominations. Do keep them flooding into the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk. And this first one comes from Connor Lynch in California. John and Andy, In accordance with your request that nominees be both people and dead, I've found someone who is both dead and the people. His name is Lyndon B. Johnson. I've noticed that the Bugle doesn't quite give LBJ the respect he deserves. In one episode, I believe it was said that he painted the White House pink and left a disco ball inside. And I would like to change that. It's a noble crusade, Connor. Sure, Johnson's sexual escapades could never compete with those of JFK, writes Connor, but there's still something to be said for a man with BJ in his initials, if you know what I mean. I sure do know what you mean, Connor. Those letters stood for Big Jugs, from his days as a woman before he went into politics. Fact. Connor continues, Johnson is an eligible hottie because of his undeniable self-confidence. When he wasn't practicing his seductive glances in a mirror, he was thinking of fantastic gifts to give foreign dignitaries. Take, for example, his first meeting with Pope Paul VI, in which he gifted the pontiff an autographed picture of himself. Ladies and church leaders love that kind of confidence. Testify. LBJ wasn't finished, though. You may be wondering, how does one follow up such a magnanimous and thoughtful gift? In 1967, on his visit to the Vatican, LBJ presented Pope Paul with a one-foot-tall bust of his own head. I can only assume the Pope was amazed at the President's generosity. Well, what finer gift can there possibly be from the leader of the free world than a marble representation of himself? Man, this man sounds hot. Yours without regret for his heresy, Connor Lynch from California. Good nomination, Connor, but not as good as this one. From a man who goes under the sobriquet of Sick Boy from Montevideo in Uruguay, he writes, I refuse to use my legal name as my job in the Uruguayan government could be somewhat compromised by this letter. It's already sounding good. Sick Boy writes, Dear most esteemed Buglic Satanic Majesties, that is a good way to start an email. He continues, I find a statistical anomaly I've detected after painstaking research quite disturbing. How come that so few hotties from history nominations come from the one continent with the most robust hottie-to-dog-face ratio? Interesting way of putting it. How come you have neglected the home of the Brazilian booty, the Argentinian coop-tastic titty, the Venezuelan oily-oily dark total-erific silhouette? How could you leave out South America? To correct this mistake, I'd like to nominate Uruguay's founding daddy, the one, the only, José Gervasio Artigas. Try saying that three times fast. Really, I insist. I won't do that because I've said it one time quite slowly and I don't know if I pronounced it right. Artigas was born in 1764 with a sort of shine in his eyes that only comes from a really wealthy background. That I could buy you look that makes women boil with passion and men repress with fury. At the age of 12, he decided to f*** right off to the countryside, language, and live among the gauchos, free-roaming spirits, that ate cows whenever they could find them, property be damned, dressed themselves mostly with leather obtained from said cows, killed people and cows just for looking at them funny, and were basically so manly that they made North American cowboys seem like towel boys at the All-Star Bum Fencing Game. Well, I'll take your word for that. I've never been to that. Clearly, you have. He continues, having learned the fine arts of horseback riding and slaughter of innocent bovines, Artigas decided to honour his upper-class upbringing by becoming a smuggler, crossing illegally into Brazil and back, bringing all kinds of presumably booty-related goods. When the government offered an amnesty for criminals in exchange for military service, Artigas accepted to defend the very border he had savagely and passionately violated, showing that his convictions were as promiscuous as his pants. Of course, his itch to double-cross was too great to be ignored. He deserted the army and went to Buenos Aires, offering his services with the same kind of haggling skill that only expert workers of the world's oldest profession can have. A big fan of the USA, he thought that having some kind of United States of South America would be swell, and argued that Uruguayan independence was a really awful idea. He fought, and he lost. Somehow, in the middle of fighting a war, he found time to impregnate countless women, including his own cousin, showing the remarkable stamina that had once made him the original Han Solo. Defeated, he went to Paraguay with his loyal slave Ancina, and died in obscurity in 1850. Hot. But wait, there's more, continues Sick Boy, as Artigas' ideological hookering would not... Hookering? Good word, is that a South American term? Could not, would not be stopped by something as trivial as death. Other people, British people in capital letters, decided that stucking a small country between Argentina and Brazil's gigantic ass cheeks would be really nifty, and they needed a founding father to make the idiots living in that godforsaken spot of land think that they really were a country. They plastered Artigas' face everywhere, even though he had been the first to say that an independent nation was a really f***ing stupid idea, and thus Uruguay was born. Here you have it, gentlemen, a man so hot, he founded a country without even wanting to. Turns out that not even he could stop his manly visage being used as propaganda under those green, intense eyes and revolutionary creating sideburns. Uruguay was born. To be fair, he probably had some responsibility in the whole Uruguay thing, seeing that he apparently fathered about 70% of the original population. Yours truly, Sick Boy from Montevideo. An outstanding nomination, Sick Boy, and well done for timing the end of your email for when my wife and daughter come home. This recording is now over. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with a full issue of The Bugle next week. Bye-bye from London. I'm off to Italy in the morning.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.